Now, this is side two of broadcast number 596. It's May the 9th, 1983. I really can't get used to those dates. It goes so fast. Now, getting back to the remark that was in the London Observer, May the 1st, 1983. They were describing Gert Heidemann, the man who was supposed to have located the diaries. They said Heidemann was a high-powered researcher rather than a writer. Incidentally, he has traveled all over the world. He's worked 30 years with Stern magazine, so he knew what he was doing. And he isn't fired, and he isn't going to leave. And he covered every revolution in Asia and South America. This is a pretty wise cookie. It says Heidemann was a high-powered researcher, and he received information of Hitler's old guard. That's after he bought Geringshot. SS Brigadier Fuhrer, B-R-I-G-A-D-E-F-U-H-R-E-R, Wilhelm Mohnke, I had him on the broadcast last week, M-O-H-N-K-E, was the bunker's last commander, and he told Heidemann about some important papers belonging to the Fuhrer. And I mentioned that this whole thing had more to do with blackmail than it had to do with who wrote the diaries, that there is a big story here, and they're beginning to acknowledge that in the papers if you read them just today. Now, the London Observer says neither S.S. Wolf, who went to Geringshot to be with Heidemann, neither S.S. Wolf nor Mohnke were hardline Nazis. But in 1920, they were part of the Free Corps, F-R-E-I-K-O-R-P-S, F-R-E-I-K-O-R-P-S officers, who, like many other nationalists, joined the Nazi bandwagon. Yippee. After World War II, Wolf was sentenced to 10 years in prison for military irregularities and partly commuted, and Mohnke was not even sentenced. Now, that is a description of two men that I mentioned last week on the air, my cast of characters. They were just guys that joined the bandwagon, okay, and they're not important. And Wolf had some military irregularities. Well, who were these characters? I mean, why does the London Observer throw this out? And I've seen this over and over again, this kind of crap. I just reached one book, The Damned Engineers. I have many books on the subject. The Damned Engineers is about the Battle of the Bulge, my friend Fritz Kramer and that gang. You know, the ones I've been studying and sharing with you on the broadcast all along, those particular characters. Okay, it says Hitler rested his highest hopes at the end of the war on the 6th Panzer Army. That was Mr. Fritz Kramer, and Mr. Dietrich had his hopes on the 1 or the ISS Panzer Corps. It was beefed up. It was the strongest corps, and these were Hitler's top people that were going to meet the American Army and socialize over there with the Battle of the Bulge in this particular area where they would be close during the war and after the war. And next week I'll do some more on their close contacts with each other. Now, in describing this SS, the ISS Panzer Corps, this book describes this was the elite 1st SS Panzer Division, the Liebenstadt. Maybe you know that name, L-I-E-B-S-T-A-N-D-A-R-T-E. The Liebstandart Adolf Hitler, commanded by SS General Wilhelm Mohnke. This was the elite Panther Corps. Because this story of the Bulge is largely concerned with this Liebstandart Division, Janice Holt-Giles writes in her book, something must be known about it. It is helpful to understand its savagery and knew something about its background. In the beginning, they were organized, the SF, by Hitler as a small elite group of 280 men sworn to absolute obedience and loyalty to him personally. They were his bodyguards, and Himmler took over this nucleus and made the black shirts, the most dreaded men on the face of Europe, known as the SS. They composed various military branches and varying duties and characteristics, but the Waffen-SS was strictly military, but the Liebstandart Division had its proud origins in the original bodyguard unit, its crack armored regiment, the 1st SS Panzer. It was the Death's Head unit. I've talked about the Death's Head on this program. The Death's Head began as concentration camp guards in 1940. They took the youngest and best men, winded them out, put them in the military unit. The 1st Panzer Regiment was not only Liebstandart, but Totenkopf, T-O-T-E-N-K-O-P-F. Their insignia was a death head. And General Mohnke was meeting. He worked in the Battle of the Bulge with Lieutenant Colonel Piper, with Mr. Otto Skorzeny, with Fritz Kramer, with Mr. Dietrich. He in this book, it tells how they worked together with, it mentions Fritz Kramer, the head of the 6th Panzer Division, Otto Skorzeny. Now, these people, Skorzeny was to set up the Odessa after the war. This was the most dangerous, the most trusted man that Adolf Hitler and Heinrich Himmler had, who was meeting with Mr. Gert Heidemann. And the London Observer says that these were just innocent little bystanders who joined the army as a fluke. Now, who was SS Karl Wolff, the second party, close to Mr. Gert Heidemann? And later we're going to take our travels. They're going to be with Mrs. Martin Bormann in Italy. They know where the Nazi art treasures are. They're going to be with Klaus Barbie. And I mentioned last week they were down with Walter Rauff in Chile. And then this week in the news that came out, I said there's no way that they could go down to Chile and not see their Nazi worker, Walter Rauff, R-A-U-F-F. Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon, Alexander Haig, had ordered the murder of Allende so Mr. Pinochet could be in power in Chile. And Walter Rauff from Nazi Germany taught them how to slice people up at Colonial Dignidad, how to torture, how to round up. If you see the movie Missing, it's a picnic compared to what Walter Rauff really was capable of doing, but you get a pretty good idea. Now, in the Brown book, a very rare book on Nazis living in Germany after the war, it was sent to me by a world watcher in New York City. There's a section on Mr. Karl Wolff, the man that the London paper says he was charged for military irregularities. Karl Wolff was Himmler's adjutant. He was arrested in his villa in Italy. For 17 years, he worked with Alan Dulles, with NATO, with the top military people. And when Mr. Eichmann was brought to trial in Israel in 1962, Mr. Wolff's name came up, so he was put in prison. He was the general of the Waffen-SS, the armed SS. He was the chief of the personal staff of the Reich Führer. He was the liaison of Himmler to Adolf Hitler. He had special powers. He was the leader of the final solution of the Jewish question. He bore responsibility for the murder of at least 300,000 Polish Jews at Treblinka. He was the highest SS and police chief in Italy, and he worked in Rome, Italy, with the Vatican, and then they were instrumental in getting Martin Bormann and their top Nazis' passports out to go to South America. He was in Italy, and his friend Walter Rauff was in Milan working with the Milan Mafia and the secretary of the Vatican, Pope Paul VI. He went on to be Pope Paul VI, Mr. Montini. He was the highest SS police chief in Italy. He committed numerous crimes from September 43 in Italy. He had 15,000 Italian men, women, and children murdered. He was guilty of carrying out the experiments on prisoners at Dachau concentration camps. That was one of his jobs. He lived with his real name in West Germany. The West German press knew where he was. They pointed to him. He was active there. He was only arrested in 1962 when his name came up in the trials in Israel, and they slapped him in jail and let him out. Mr. Lemitzer of the United States Army and Alan Dulles and all the military and CIA were instrumental in pleading, let this nice man out. And he was charged with 300,000 deaths of Jews, 15,000 Italians, medical experiments at Dachau concentration camp, and the London Observer passes them off. Now, when Mr. Gert Heidemann got married, attending his wedding, the best men at the wedding, he had to have two, not one. One was SS Karl Wolff, and one was Wilhelm Mahnke. One of the things he was prosecuted for was correspondence where he said, he wrote in 1942 a letter that he had special joy that 5,000 members of the chosen people are going to Treblinka every day. This is from the book Operation Sunrise. And if you want information about SS Karl Wolff, get The Secret Surrender by Alan Dulles or Operation Sunrise. And I'll do more on the air with you next week. The role he had with William Donovan, with Himmler, with Hitler's people in Italy, making, wheeling, and dealing so that when the war was over, the smooth transition of the American army coming in and then Wolf surviving, and as I say, by a fluke, he went to jail, but he was quickly out. Well, now, Mr. Mahnke was in this general, this top special death's head group, was in that close geographic area with where Henry Kissinger was at the Battle of the Bulge, and Prince Bernhard and Mr. Piper and Diedrich and these various people that Joe McCarthy had released, and John J. McCloy made a point of releasing from prison, Dachau prison. That's why I call the story of John Kennedy's murder from Dachau to Dallas. They were all taken as prisoners. They were all released. And they all linked down to South America and the international Nazi movement that have been doing death squads for so long. Now, Mr. Mongke not only is written up in every book on the Battle of the Bulge, you'll find his name, but he has another position. His buddies all go to the docket. I don't know how he separates from them, but what happens is that he is in charge of the bunker. He's been Hitler's right-hand man. He's entered every country with Hitler that Hitler invaded. He is at his side. This is the guy that Gerd Heidemann is with and socializing with as soon as they have Goering's yacht, and I'm sure long before that, but the yacht was the excuse. And the excuse of traveling with SS Karl Wolff down to Mengele's and Bormann and Walter Rauff and Klaus Barbie in South America was he was going to write a book on SS Wolff. He was just the traveling Odessa network. That's what he was, and that's why the diary story is so big. But if you have any books on the last days of Hitler, and particularly the book called The Bunker by James P. O'Donnell, it was published by Houghton Mifflin in 1978, read The Bunker. I read the book this weekend. I just sat down and read the whole book because when you get the index, there are many, many pages, 40 or 50 pages in the index, about Wilhelm Mohnke, M-O-H-N-K-E. But Mr. O'Donnell doesn't tell you that he's the order of the death's head, that he's the head of the death's head, that he was set up very, very early with Heinrich Himmler, that Himmler's two men, Himmler, as I say, the most feared man in the world, that next to Otto Skorzeny, had SS Karl Wolff in Italy making arrangements. And then he had Mr. Mohnke in the eastern part of Europe with Der Fuhrer in Berlin. So his buddies are taken prisoner at some point, and I haven't yet been able to find the date that they were taken, but he is in charge of the bunker. So when you're reading the book on the bunker, you see this same character, Wilhelm Mohnke. When you read about the Bulge, you see it, but they don't make the connections in either book. The Bulge book is about the Battle of the Bulge, and the bunker doesn't tell his activities with Hitler's Martin Bormann and Otto Skorzeny. See, the important thing is that I said the reason for the Battle of the Bulge being so important is that the war would have been over 7 months earlier and Montgomery could have gone through Europe and into Berlin, but the battle was stalled by General Eisenhower so that Mr. Patton can get in, and it was stalled 7 months so that Martin Bormann could get the jewels and the money and the forged money. And this Mr. Mohnke also works with the top forgers of Nazi Germany. We'll do more on that next week. But the purpose of stalling it, of letting the Americans die, of holding the line, of Skorzeny impersonating Americans, is to stall the war, to get to Berlin, even if the Russians were moving from the other direction, till all the cash is out of Europe. That was Operation Bernhard. And Prince Bernhard was instrumental in the betrayal of the army at Arnhem, and it was called Operation Bernhard. So, interestingly enough, this was Martin Bormann's scheme. So, in the bunker, the last days of Hitler is, again, Heinrich Himmler, Mr. Wolff's boss, Mr. Mohnke's boss, with Martin Bormann. They left on the 20th of April, and Mr. Mohnke's in charge. Now, this book, if you read it carefully, you read those last days of Hitler, and you go through that whole book called The Bunker, you get the library paperback, there is no way that you can say without any doubt in your mind that that was Hitler dead. This book leaves a lot of unanswered questions. And, of course, again, it was you, Trevor Roper, who's working with Gerd Heidemann and Mr. Mohnke and SS Wolff, who tells you the Führer died. Now, in this book, it tells that Mr. Wilhelm Mohnke revealed that Hitler had a double in the bunker. That's on page 366. And they tell how they had to kill off the double, and they displayed him publicly. Well, how many other doubles were there? And it tells how he worked so closely with the Führer up to the very last hour. The Führer says, tell me when the Russians are within 24 hours so I can go. And his pilots are in and out, and Bormann's clinging out the secret papers. And Mr. Mohnke is so important to the Führer and the important Bormann papers that could blackmail the Western world. I think this whole story has more to do with blackmail. I said that 3 weeks ago. I used to play bridge a lot before I became a researcher and put more time in bridge and research, and I know what a trump card is. And these dogs hold a lot of trump cards. That's why before this program began, when we were talking on the talk show, we were talking about 60 Minutes and Rudolf Hess, and I'll do more next week on it. These people have a lot of information and diaries. Those diaries may have been written after 1964, but that doesn't mean a thing. We haven't seen what's in the 60 volumes. So Monkey was working in the Battle of the Bulge with Fritz Kramer, with Sepp Dietrich, Otto Skorzeny, Mr. Piper, and Mr. Herman Preiss. Then he skips out. All of them are in the docket at Dachau. He skips out, and he's there with the Fuhrer, with the Doubles, with Hannah Reich, R-E-I-T-S-E-H, the pilot, Hitler's favorite pilot, and with General Robert Ritter, another pilot of his. And the book, The Bunker, tells you when Himmler left, when Hannah Reich allegedly left with Bormann. Now, they're all leaving, and this book also tells you that Bormann died, and he didn't die, and Mr. Mueller was supposed to die, and he didn't die, and Rudolf Hess is in that prison. It will be cremated, and nobody can talk to him. So in this book, it also says that Marshal Zhukov said there's no solid evidence that Hitler died, and then Churchill wondered, and they sent in you, Trevor Roper, that double Dacher, the great guy who is now caught with his lies of convenience. And it also brings up the subject of 40 survivors. Where are they now and where are the papers? So among this team, this very important Mr. M-O-H-N-K-E was working with my favorite character, the German Nazi Fritz Kramer. Incidentally, I finally had the nerve to send to Washington a letter to Fritz Kramer. I mailed it out today. If I'm killed this week, you'll know why. I didn't do it because I wanted to die. It took a lot of nerve to do it. I sent a picture of Fritz Kramer from the book The Battle of the Bulge, and I just sent it to his Washington office and said, "Is this your picture, Mr. Fritz Kramer?" I gave you the address on the air. "Is this your picture?" Because I really want to know if Hitler's Fritz Kramer has been running our Pentagon all these years. It took a lot of nerve. I guess that took more nerve than anything I've done since I have been doing my research. I said, "Is this you? And if it isn't you, where did Hitler's Fritz Kramer go after the war?" I just asked him two questions. I kept a copy of the letter. Let's see what happens. Now, there was a story in this, it was a wire service AP story in the San Francisco Chronicle today. German editor says an ugly story feared behind the Hitler hoax. There may be an ugly story. As soon as the diaries came, the historian said, "We'll have to rewrite history. This may change everything." If they were so sure of their history, why did they have to rewrite anything? Now, just in summary, because I've given you a lot of material about these names, I want to explain some of these cast of characters again, because their names come up in every event. Isn't it funny that when a story of Hitler's diary comes, we have the head of the Death's Head over there in the Battle of the Bulge with all my favorite people that I've been talking about? The main characters involved in the United States and in the betrayal of the United States, in wheeling and dealing, in supporting Adolf Hitler, building him up, forget Great Britain, I'm talking about the United States, before the war, during the war, and after the war, and worked with SS Karl Wolf and Joseph Mengeles, who worked with NASA and does experiments down in Paraguay, and Klaus Barbie and Otto Skorzeny, all working with the CIA. There were certain main characters, I can't list them all, but there's certain names that run through this whole thing, and they also run through the murder of John Kennedy when we get back to that. John J. McCloy, who was the attorney's his office represented I.G. Farb in the 10 years he lived in Paris from 1930 to 40, when he was at the Olympic Games with Adolf Hitler. He was with Rudolf Hess just prior to his flying to Great Britain, and maybe that, the Rockefeller connections, the Farben connections, that's one of the reasons the United States and Great Britain together don't want this person, whoever it is, to be seen or known. John J. McCloy was on the Warren Commission, an important person. It was Sullivan, the law office of Sullivan and Cromwell, Allen Dulles. John Foster Dulles, his brother, became the Secretary of State. Allen Dulles sat in Bern, Switzerland with Mr. Walter Rauf and SS Karl Wolf, who was simultaneously doing the experiments at Treblinka and murdering these people, sending masses of them off daily to their deaths with his personal joys. And he's sitting with our lawyers and representatives in Switzerland simultaneously giving orders at the same time he's sitting with the United States government and then sitting, of course, in Germany at the coffee houses with Mengele's. Mengele's wasn't even wanted after all his experiments at the death camps for a few years until he was recognized and then went on south. William Donovan of the OSS. And then, of course, this marvelous book on the Belarusian secret, the Nazis coming to this country. The key men during that period were Richard Nixon, Frank Wiesner, and Nelson Rockefeller. Now, I believe that Eisenhower's reward for stalling the war and letting these Nazis out and this network continue, because we're going to have Russia as our enemy, was to make Eisenhower president of the United States and Richard Nixon his vice president. I believe now that anyone that ran against Nixon in 1960 would have been killed. I don't think anything John Kennedy did even alone was the cause of his death. If Adlai Stevenson had won the nomination, he would have been killed. Nixon was selected long time ago in 1946, or when he was in the Navy intelligence. Herman Abst is an important man because of his running the Reichsbank, taking care of the Deutsche Bank, rather, the money that paid Hitler and the salaries of the Goerings and the Wolfs and the whole gang. He wrote their paychecks. He was on the board of IG Farben. He wrote the paycheck for John Paul, who was just Mr. Carol Wojtyla, working at Solvay Chemical at Auschwitz, and now is in charge of the Vatican Bank. Herman Abst is important. And then joining our CIA after the war was Klaus Barbie, who visits the United States and Germany, Joseph Mengele's, who visits California and New Orleans and New Jersey to see his family in New Jersey, Walter Rauf, working from Milan down in Chile with the torture and the Nazis down there, Joseph Mengele's working with our energy department, with NASA, and down in Paraguay, Carl Wolf, free to help set up NATO and the Nazis after the war. Now, as I say, Mr. Kissinger and Mr. Nixon and Haig helped put Walter Rauf's power in Chile up with Mr. Pinochet, because he became very important in training them in how to torture to keep the people quiet and so forth. Now, the money that went into these death squads came out of Nguyen Bank. That was the assassination teams brought over from dope dealing and dope traffic, and it brings in then Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley and Frank Turpel and Thomas Kleins, and they were into the Vietnam War that escalated thanks to the murder of John Kennedy. Then Lyndon Johnson and Fritz Kramer and Haig and Kissinger escalated the war, and the war brought in the dope traffic and the assassination death squads and the top military admirals and generals in Australia, dealing death in 26 countries with spokes coming out of a wheel out of the Nguyen Bank, linked down to colonial dignitas, where the Nazis continue their torture and dissecting people and socializing. It's a colonial dignitas is a colony between Chile and Argentina. We have these people together at the time of the Battle of the Bulge. My favorite people, these were Mr. Himmler's soldiers, the Death Head Unit of Mr. Wilhelm Mohnke, M-O-H-N-K-E, Fritz Kramer, and Piper and Dietrich, Skorzeny and Bormann, stalling the war, getting the Bormann money out. And later next week, I'll tell you how Mr. Gerd Heidemann goes to Mrs. Bormann. She moves from Germany to Italy and can continue with her husband's papers and blackmail the Western world and set up the Odessa as Mrs. Skorzeny does. She's still alive, these widows. Mrs. Hermann Göring operates and gives the yacht. Her daughter was a friend of Gerd Heidemann, and then it's a meeting place of the top Nazis. Incidentally, Melvin Belli was or is an attorney for Mrs. Hermann Göring. He represented Nazi Gestapo Errol Flynn and Jack Ruby, and now Lech Walesa. His wife is trying to bring Lech Walesa to San Francisco for the Democratic Convention. That's another combine of people all under the law offices of one person. Now, in Bern, Switzerland, Mr. Himmler was working with Alan Dulles and Mr. Wolf and Walter Rauf and Mr. Montini, the Secretary of the Vatican, and Martin Bormann, and various Jesuit priests. In fact, John Foster Dulles' son became a Jesuit priest with Martin Bormann's son, and they went down to South America together. And Mrs. Gerd Heidemann is praising the true story of Hitler. Now, the wife of the man who had so-called the diaries or produced them. She says it's a shame that they've stopped printing them, that there's more to tell, and she has some very revealing words that I'll share with you next week. But she thinks it's a tragedy that the young people who want to know so much about her Führer are being kept deprived by stopping the diaries. As I say, only two diaries were seen, and there were 60 in total. I just die with curiosity to know what's in the other 58. Can you imagine? I don't believe it's all gossip about Himmler or Goering or Goebbels. Can you imagine? They say it was all taken from published material that was put out several years ago. But if that's true, why is everybody so nervous? Well, the FBI has gotten in the case. The European governments have called the FBI in the case. Well, the director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, was vice president of Interpol with all these top Nazis. And if any of you don't remember that, I can do details of J. Edgar Hoover working with them. Before and after the war, he adored them. He had their pictures on the wall, and then he took them down after Pearl Harbor, but became vice president of Interpol, and I can do more on Interpol with you. So when Reinhard Gehlen worked with Alan Dulles and came to the United States and set up the National Security Council and the CIA and then went back to Germany before he set up his own intelligence agency, he was given hundreds of millions of dollars by the CIA, and he and Mr. Joseph Mengele and Klaus Barbie and Martin Bormann and Otto von Bolschwing and Otto Skorzeny and S.S. Wolf and Walter Rauf were all together. Now, the significance of these diaries so far, and it came to me immediately when the story broke, was, as I said before, the cast of characters that I mentioned last week. Who are the people? Forget, as I say, the ink, the paper, the amount paid. It doesn't matter whether they paid him 50 cents or 50 million. It wasn't done for money. They can rob a bank. They can take jewelry out of a store. They can counterfeit money. They can parlay money from narcotics all over the world. It wasn't for $3 million, whatever was it Stern paid. That wasn't the important thing. Stern paid whatever it was, but Mr. Heidemann worked for them for 30 years. And the London Times has Lord Double Dacre working for them. He's on the board of the London Times. So no newspaper likes to make a fool of themselves, and nobody sends a man to Europe to say, yes, it's authentic, we'll get it out. There's more problems that surface after the story begins to unfold than just saying, no, it's not authentic. So you get to the question of what is the purpose of this, and why is Mr. Heidemann servicing now? Who is the SS person, the Wehrmacht person in Switzerland? Somebody has been sitting and writing these things, these 60 volumes or 50,000 pages. They may have started in 1964. That's the year that John Kennedy was killed, in November of 63. And they say these started being written in 64. If Treason for My Daily Bread is true, if Martin Bormann were part of the murder of John Kennedy, working with Clay Shaw through the Gehlen operation at the Trade Mart in New Orleans, which is what this book alleges, do they want their money paid now? Are they blackmailing the United States? Certainly, Mr. Rudolf Hess can't blackmail the United States because he can't even see family except one person a month alternating with four people and guards in the room and no notes. But all these other dogs are out loose, and they know what the British government has done. They know what the United States government has done. The only people who doesn't know it are the suckers, the citizens, who buy these books or read the articles of the cover story. So somebody is holding Trump cards, and we'll do more on it next week because I knew it was a big story because of the people involved, the Death's Head, Himmler, Bormann, the Bormann art treasures, but the time is up now, so we got to go. I'll be back with you to continue on the Hitler Diaries and more news next week. This is Mae Brussel, and it's KAZU-FM in Pacific Grove, California.